Next item is 9 procurement half yearly report.
percentage. Can I ask which particular waiver you referred to?
There's only one waiver. 53,000. So I can understand continuing on the contract, time and all the rest of it, only person providing the service, that sort of thing. But if you're putting money into regeneration, why would you have to worry about the procurement process? Sorry?
Chairman, I think I'm able to assist with that one. Brooklyn House was an interesting project which was done with the aid of NHS funding. So NHS England provided over £1 million to acquire 6 properties on the Pan Estate in order to be able to rehouse people with learning disability and move them from a care home setting to a supported living setting. But the work with NHS England required the money to be spent by the end of March. But in order to support the money and get the thing in place, we also had to procure a management company in place, and we had to get a care company in place. So the waiver relates to the management company to put it in place short term so that we could access the funding from NHS England. But then when the contract comes up again, it'll be relet properly. But it was about accessing over £1 million worth of funding from NHS England. We needed to have a separate management company in place. Does that help?
Thank you. What kind of money will that be generated?
It actually generates us a saving on the adult social care budget because it's cheaper and more cost-effective for us to have people with a disability in a supportive environment than in a residential environment. I don't have the exact numbers to hand, but residential care costs are somewhere between £700 and £800 a week. Whereas in a supported living environment, costs are somewhere between £300 and £400 a week.
Right, I've got a question. First page 5, where it refers to the EU procurement directive. Do I take it that it's stopped completely if we have no deal and we leave, or not? Or is it drag on?
No, initially we won't be with Brexit. The regulations are embedded into our legislation, so the regulations and procurement directives that we offer to the board will continue, and we'll need to wait for final assembly legislation to make any changes. And I think the general view of procurement is that probably is going to be one of the least things the government should focus on. So we don't expect to see any changes to procurement processes. Whatever happens on the 31st of October.
So potentially you may still have to advertise any large projects into the EU?
Potentially, yes.
Right. I have another one. On page 1.5, waivers, it's paragraph 13. It refers to the procurement board for waivers and contract prices over £100,000. The procurement board will consider this request. First question is, when did the last time the procurement board go? And is there not a second figure? Because that's variations over £100,000. But if there are variations over £1 million, is that still looked at by the same board, or does that refer to Cabinet, or what?
So the procurement board comprises four officers. We don't meet on a regular basis as a board as a sitting in a group because that wouldn't enable us to be flexible to deal with waivers when they come up. So we deal with waivers as a board virtually. So waivers are submitted to us myself, Jeff, Sword, Fairchand, and Hayley Holden, and we look at them before the deal is whether or not it should be approved. So that's how the procurement board functions. We would consider a waiver based on contract price, whether it be over 100,000 or potentially over 1 million. It's rare and large enough to see that kind of variation. But where it is particularly large variation, we would necessarily be able to end of the cabinet member to make sure that he was happy with what's the direction. But generally, that's how waivers are dealt with in terms of. And I have to say, as a board, we've had some things we've been looking at one rewrite individually, and quite often they're challenging back why we're not in the waiver, and seeking more information on that.
So the board doesn't actually sit, but do you list those decisions made by the board, although it's all done electronically, are they still listed? So it is, so the board has got some power and has shown it's actually working.
It is all obtained electronically, so we can always provide details of the way it's been approved. There is a standard form that we use, so we require the department to complete it, providing us with specific information and views of the board that are reflected on that form, so at any time we can see that waiver. We do go occasionally, if we did meet earlier this year, when collectively we were concerned about a particular waiver, we didn't feel that one we could deal with just by exchanging invoices, so we did sit and look. Along with the office being submitted the way that you can go into parts with more detail. So we take it on a case by case basis, depending on the details. We operate, we go through the scheme of locations to offices, as I say, through the facility and the ways we're counting on.
So we're saying if you go to an XB, there's one waiver worth £178,000 and there's another waiver worth £120,000. Both of them refer to the human pool.
All the waivers will come back to the human pool. There's an exception to that. We don't allow the province of the value to do anything other than come back to the human pool.
Just whilst we're on that appendix as well, it lists the number of ones, but do you ever actually have a waiver? You know, has one company actually asked for more than one waiver or not? Because this is, you know, because it doesn't actually identify who the final person put the order with. So, what I'm trying to say is there some companies who have more waivers than others, or all these individual companies, and they're not repeat companies coming back for various waivers, which would give me a worry about the company you're using.
Waivers are something that we grant internally. So if an association care, for example, needs to urgently place a contract, they may apply to procurement for a waiver. So it isn't the company that we're potentially looking to go to. And a waiver won't always be used to simply enable us to go to one contract. A waiver may be used to vary some of the other standing orders, so it might be to change the procurement slightly or to limit the amount of buying register. So it's not the companies that ever requested the waiver or even part of that. The waiver process is an internal process. The council to contract will give the form and say these reasons for efficiency, expediency, or whichever we need to ask for a waiver, we will consider on that basis. So these waivers are available to a whole range of companies. There's no connection between the company.
On item 6, under contract monitoring, talk about the scope and the new framework. Does that exist now, or will that be put towards either this committee or scrutiny to have a look at the framework?
Sorry, which one did you say?
Para 20, contract monitoring. Mentions the framework.
It's a document designed to assist all the council departments to understand how to operate the contract monitoring and the software system that we have that they are able to access through portal, which we use to procurement. I have a feeling that on the scrutiny agenda, they specifically have on their work plan scrutiny as a subject that today we should take forward later in the year. So scrutiny will be looking at procurement process later in the year, as an understanding.
Because part of that is the governance, and you could say part of it comes under audit as well.
Well, the procurement rules are approved as and when they make it, first by bringing it through audit committee and then on to the full council, and they form part of the constitution, so they are very much part of the governance that we operate, and indeed subject to audit fairly regularly.
Just one moment. very boringly on the next page, 26, leisure services uniform, approximate £900 cost avoidance. I wouldn't actually call it a saving, that's just good negotiation.
I would disagree. I think what we're trying to explain is that by using the process correctly and that you do the negotiation, you can get best value out of your contract.
Like that one. Appendix C. On page I-17, it's got develop and deliver a targeted training program for officers undertaking procurement. Date commence 26th of May 2017, and then it's saying each module will commence a training at the bottom in July 2019. So, why has it taken 2 years to get to this training, and when did it be finished? I think I'll leave it there. I have others, but I'll leave it. Another question to the seconder? Sorry, proposer? If you want to go to the votes? Same again. Vote, please.
Unanimous.
You can go now, Steve. Council's risk profile, item 10, paper J. Back to Dave Martin again.
Thank you for your information. Our strategic solicitor has had two additional risks added to it as a result of internal audit results. Those internal results that you received at the meeting in May regarding GDPR, and the other one around previous compliance of buildings under the council's ownership. The draft register was reviewed by the management team, who make no revisions to any of this latest scores at this point. At the committee's request, we have additional comments we made about mitigation, or additional mitigation included. Those items are now in the italics with the risk register, which is paragraph 12 onwards. Particular note on the new risks. That are on pages J16 and J17. They're both scored very highly, but the rating should see reduction significantly given the time frame suggested the actions are actually undertaken. The actions, including mitigation and risk register, were taken from the internal audit reports and then approved by corporate management team. So I want to invite you to ask any questions or for me to send any comments back to the suggestions to the corporate management team.
Members have any questions? Well, I think I'll go to one. On J7, and it's failure to identify and effectively manage situation where vulnerable children are subject to abuse. It's not actually about that, but there was a schools forum which is showing that SEN statements and various other things are gradually increasing. So I wonder whether there's ever a sort of a future look at the risk that underfunding on those areas may actually reflect on children subject to abuse. Because the funding, you know, it is under tremendous strain at the moment. And I'm just wondering, if we don't get enough money, we don't identify the children, and then it just goes on from there. I think John's going to answer that.
Thank you, Chair. I think in one sense, it's you can view it as being positive that those people who need to go to SEN are being identified because they come to the system and you need to identify them. Of course, it is a risk if we can't fund them. But of course, the reason we identify this as a strategic risk is that we recognise we will need to find reprioritise our funding to make sure that we manage down this risk in the light of the increasing SEND. In fact, increasing SEND is a national challenge that's very much come to the fore and has given us significant problems with our budget. I think what we're saying there by having the strategic risk outlined here, that when we come to the portion of prioritise our money, we have to take that SEND increase into account as well as the risk that we've identified here. So, yeah, the finance is a risk, but it comes into the overall management of the strategic risk at that point.
I think I'm really asking, you know, how far, you know, these are the risks as they are, but do you take a view that, hang on, next year, if we don't do something, this risk is going to increase even more?
I think as Dave's outlined, we look at these risks monthly at the corporate management team, and if the director felt that there was a necessity because of the pressure we're seeing doing to change this risk from an amber to a red, then he would do that. We would refer that back, and the rationale for the change would be increasing SEN and not insufficient money to be able to deal with it. That would be the signal for like for the organisation to think about how do we respond to that particular change.
Any questions for the members at all? Obviously personally happy with your risk scope, Mark. And then what we need to approve. Right. Option one, audit committee approves the strategic risk of the council as set out in paragraph 12. So, proposal. Chris proposes. You can second this time. The vote, please.
Unanimous.
Okay. Right. Come to the exciting part.